See, here's the basic trend in the fiber field in those days. The higher cost of agricultural products, which means cotton and viscose and
rayon.
The higher cost of agricultural products, increasing industrial productivity, and growing population are the fundamental pressures behind industry's drive for newer and better synthetics. Today, Americans want more clothes. They can afford better clothes, and there are an ever-increasing number of Americans to wear them.
Mm-hmm. So it was
basically that. And we went into the wool-like fiber. Now the nylon was a silk-like fiber, you see.
And DuPont had that wrapped up.
And they had that wrapped up, and they gave us a license to one of the patents, and we got into it. Mm-hmm. And after we had an operating company called Chemstrand producing ethylene, of which I was president of Chemstrand.
Could we talk a little bit about Chemstrand then? I gathered from the production in Alabama didn't begin until 52, I think, as I recall.
Yeah, so, about that. I think that's about
so you were president during a startup phase when there was still development work going on.
See, we did the development work in Dayton on that. Mm-hmm. But we had the plant in Decatur, Alabama. And, of course, we got that plant started.
Why Decatur, Alabama?
I don't remember.
Perhaps it was because that's where the... you didn't make cloth, you just made fiber.
We just made the fiber.
Yeah, so perhaps that's where the clothing manufacturers were, the textile manufacturers?
I don't recall. I mean, it was close to Anniston, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
We had a plant there, but...
Did viscose have something to say about where it was?
No.
Yeah.
Well, viscose had a plant there. Well, they were in it, of course. We were 50-50 partners in Anniston.
Yeah.
And they made me president of it. During this, you might say, the research development phase.
There must have been different kinds of problems in developing a new fiber than there were in some of the hydrocarbons and, you know, sort of petrochemical-based research. Yeah. I wonder if you could talk about some of those challenges.
What do you mean, how they did?
Well, they were... Many of the problems must have been engineering problems. In spinning
the
fiber.
Or in the construction of the plant, sometimes in the production of the product.
Mm-hmm.
So the nitrile was engineering. So what? And then the plant itself, well, we had to make the polymer for the fiber. And that required engineering, of course. It was done for the polymerization process, for filling nitrile. And special conditions, and then in the fiber itself. And spinning the fiber, that was another engineering problem, how to wash out the solvent and so on. But spinnerets, you see, would give off a little fiber, and then that would be wound up, and we had to wash, and in that process, we had to wash out any solvent that might have been remaining in it, and come up with a spool of fiber. Such as this, although this is nylon, but this is an example of what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
That's nylon.
Yeah. It didn't have the lighter attachment.
Yeah.
Though.
But each valve had its own specific problems which we had to meet and try to solve.
If I could ask a slightly different question about Chemstrand, that period in the late 40s is when polymer science was really coming into its own, after a lot of the work that had been done.
We had a plastics plant at Springfield, Massachusetts. And at first we made the polymer for Aqualand at that plant.
Mm-hmm.
Then we transferred it later, we put in another plant to make the polymer right where we were doing the spinning.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you and your other chemists and chemical engineers following the work that was going on in polymer science in general? You know, and Carruthers' work and a lot of the work on mechanisms that had been done in World War II?
God helping us, they did.
Yeah. Were the staff going to things like the Gibson Island conferences on polymers and the usual ACS meetings and
presenting papers sometimes? Well, we had an alert crowd. I mean, the incentive was there. They looked at it. Not that I'm saying that they were the best people in the world, but they were damn good people.
After you came back from being president of ChemStrand, you just returned full time to being vice president of research, development, and
in charge of the whole
engineering
operation all over the country.
We started to talk briefly at lunch about the difference in managing 80 people and the difference in managing a few thousand people, which is
I don't see any difference.
Well, I just wondered if you could
put it on a larger scale, that's all.
Could you just talk a little bit about the differences in running Thomas and Hochwald laboratories in the 30s and being in charge of all technology and science for a very large corporate organization?
Well, it just meant that I was busier and I had to have more contacts with the directors of research, associate directors, and so on. Before, I would do it more or less personally with the individuals, you see. But I had to let others do that, and then they in turn reported to me, you see. So that's, you might say, my authority was extended to the associate directors, group leaders, and directors of research.
Did you find, did you miss the laboratory?
Yes, I did. I stopped doing laboratory work in, when was it, 40 or 45. I missed that.
You were dealing more with budgets than chemicals?
I was dealing with projects as they were going on, but I didn't have, there were so many of them, I didn't have any time to spend on it, except in a supervisory capacity. To these other people, my assistants, if you want to call them. So it's an extension of your authority through other people.
It must have been, not different, but how did Monsanto go about planning long-term developments in this larger arena? I mean, at Thomas and Hochwald, clients would come in with a problem, or you would seek out a client if you had an answer to their problem. But it must have been slightly different trying to plan where the company should be 10 years down the road across a broad front like that.
To me, that was more or less obvious in what was going on. If you keep up with the industry and with the literature and so on, you don't have any trouble doing that. But how do you know when synthetic detergents were coming in? You knew when textile fibers were coming in, and the clock was successful. They showed a clear path. And in the petroleum and the petrochemicals, I mean, you needed certain raw materials for plastics, you needed for detergents.
Mm-hmm.
And that enabled you to carry on in petrochemicals to produce those.
Mm-hmm.
So one follows the other. To me, that's a simple matter.
Mm-hmm. So, how did you keep up with things? Just, personally, did you continue to read the chemical literature, or you just showed up?
Well, friends, I used to study patents sometimes, when the patent results would come in. And that's where I saw that the Russians had, through the use of of a reduction process caused a dimerization of acrylonitrile.
Hmm.
Well, that's as far as it went. But I could see that that's a damn good raw material for the raw materials needed for nylon.
Hmm.
So I called up on the phone one day and told our director of research, for Christ's sake, put somebody on his job.
Hmm.
On the dimerization, electrodimerization of acrylonitrile, see what you can do. Fortunately, he had an awfully good man that he put onto it. And within a year, by God, we were making a lot of raw materials of nylon
mm-hmm.
from acrylonitrile, which made one main product of Monsanto useful for two different fibers that we were in.
Sure. So had you been
the natural?
Yeah. Were you buying the nylon intermediates outside before that?
No. Well, we were making them too
mm-hmm.
by the standard methods.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a much cheaper. I mean, mm-hmm. you just put this into an electrolyte, acrylonitrile,
mm-hmm.
and that causes two of them to join together, acrylonitrile, which gives you a C6 chain. Then you take that and you can make a dipic acid, which mm-hmm. is one of the raw materials, or you can take a dipic acid and hydrogenate or hydrolyze it
mm-hmm.
and make
ethylene diamond.
Hexamethylene diamond.
Well, that was and again, there's
that's just one example.
Yeah.
I mean, this mm-hmm. my own going through the literature.
Mm-hmm.
And telling the inventor, I mean, my name is not on that patent.
Mm-hmm.
It's the man who did the work, Basil. But I had the idea,
mm-hmm.
I might say, of the utilization of one raw material for two fibers.
Mm-hmm.
Manny Basil.
Mm-hmm.
He's now retired from Montana. That's about the extent of it, isn't it? 20 minutes to 3.
Yeah, would you like to stop there and we can...
you think we got enough?
Well, we, I mean, there are certain...
All your points?
Oh, most of them, yeah. We could talk, at some time, we could talk a little bit more about some of the work that you did after you retired from Monsanto. I'd be interested in...
After leaving Montana?
Yeah,
I'd rather not talk about
okay.
that. Okay. Don't define the specific findings.
The one thing that just struck me about it was you started off in consulting and then came full circle back to consulting.
Ended up in,
yeah.
Well, what the hell? I didn't want to sit on my rear end and do it. And I'm still interested in things. And I keep up fairly well with what's going on. So that when these companies came in, and I had, I don't know how many, I had 6 or 7 companies in that period, from 64 until now. I haven't got any now, but because I gave them up. But I had, well, I told you this morning, Cut the Light, and Panica, Witco, English company, Monta Edison in Italy, so on. I used to do a lot of traveling.
Well, you'd have to with clients that widely distributed. Well, I think that we have covered most things, and
I think so.
Yeah, I just had one other thing that we usually ask at the end of an interview is. You must have accumulated, in addition to the materials you showed us, do you have other papers and files that you've accumulated over the years, or?
Hell, I got a scrapbook. I mean, it is actually scrap. I don't know if there's anything in that. I looked over some of the things, and that's a principal thing. And of course, that's the time I left Monsanto, those books.
Yeah. Does Monsanto have records from your years there? Did they keep files, your office files and things?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what. I think so, though. And that article that they interviewed me on, which I gave you, I mean, you might read that, and that'll bring you up to date.
Yeah, I'll look forward to reading that. I would like to read that.
But this other scrapbook is, well, it's just, it's scrap in its almost horrible sense. But I was just going through this, some accumulations of junk. Some of it's repetitious too. And that's that article I gave you. And you have this. It's the original building of that site. Mm-hmm. That's what we bought when we found moving from this other place in town. And this is just pictures of the upper laboratory. Yeah, this is, we moved from this laboratory here.
Oh, yeah.
On the third floor up there.
Must have gotten a little warm there in the summer. It must have gotten warm in the summers on the third floor.
Yeah. Well, this is just a little pamphlet. This is just, I don't know, you had that. And
that's right, yeah.
And also I gave you this, the bomb on that newspaper, the date and work. They tell us not for a laboratory, not continue the language state.
Well, those I could, I'd just like to take a reference. I think we have that journal in the library.
Well, you can take that if you want.
Okay.
What is the talk I gave before the University of Missouri as well? You have this.
Yes, I will take that with me.
Well, these are just newspaper articles, guys. Maybe I talk too much in my day. But people were asking me, and this the eye looking at kind of the bikini test.
Yeah, that yes, we would be interested in.
It's in that newspaper article too, but I think maybe you'd better use that.
Yeah.
But for too sick, return
it. Oh, of course.
I mean, things like this. I mean, that's the newspaper. I don't think it's worthwhile. I thought the lead drive over to the University of Dayton. The search of this view, that, and the little fight with the search. You don't want that.
Well, perhaps we can sit down at some other time and talk about your work on regional development with the St. Louis Research Council and some other things. That's,
this is when I got my degree at St. Louis U, honorary degree. I had luck doing the city one, and I don't think this is of any most importance to it.
Okay. This looks as though it might be from the bikini test.
That's right. Mm-hmm. It is. It's the diary. Mm-hmm. Right there, well, that's a local situation. Mm-hmm. These are just cuttings out of the newspapers. Mm-hmm. And can really do. One of the pictures Bert's eye did is airplane views of the laboratory. Mm-hmm. You don't need that.
No. Well, it's good to know you have them, kids.
Well, this is sometimes when we were on TV.
Oh.
This is on a development that was not successful, so we better not talk about it.
It was
brilliant.
Yeah, I had that on my list. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about it or not.
But when you talk about failures, then you got some success.
Well, wasn't the problem really that it was word got out too soon? And
no, it took too much to get it into the soil.
Because
you have to put it into the soil so that it will start agglomerating and from the polyelectrolytic action that's required. And it took too much labor to get it in there.
Mm-hmm. So it was. The chemistry was fine, it was just
chemistry was fine, yeah. You know. There's chemistry in the laboratory and some more pictures of our research group.
Most of those are probably in the other scrapbook, I guess.
Yeah.
The older ones.
That's about
that. These we would like to borrow. We'll certainly be all good. Thank you. I wonder if we could end with just a few words on the on your work that you were telling us about at lunch, the atomic, the work on the Manhattan Project and the bikini test, which was after the war. But would you like to say a few words about that on tape?
Well, there's really not much to say except that I attended the meetings with the other people, GE and Westinghouse people, and we were, of course, the favorite boys out there. We flew from Washington to California, boarded the government planes, went to Hawaii, and then in Hawaii we were picked up by a gunboat.
Mm-hmm.
And we flew out to Kwajalein from Hawaii. There we got on a destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
And they we got there the next day at Patina, where we on ships, of course, we lived on a ship. Not this naval vessel, but a passenger ship.
Mm-hmm.
In order to watch the shots. And then afterwards, after it's over, we inspected the ships after the radioactivity died down a little. Found that even cans of fruit and so on were radioactive as a result of fruit and so on in the can.
Mm.
And of course it destroyed this Japanese ship, this battleship, Nagato, I believe it was. And it was just a marvelous experience to see that.
Yeah. What did you and the rest of the group talk about? I mean, do you remember anything in particular that people talked about afterwards while you were on the way back?
Just the effectiveness and the awfulness of the bomb. That's about all.
Yeah.
Except there was no terror, I mean, to see that damn thing go off with these immense clouds of what my article described.
Yeah, well, we'll certainly be able to read that. And,
you see these enormous clouds of smoke going to the heavens and different flashes of light, and it was a scary thing, I can tell you that. And, but nevertheless, I feel the way I said at lunch, so far as we're concerned, by God, we better keep the bomb and keep it alive.
Yeah, as a deterrent.
As a deterrent.
Yeah. Well, that's just two other questions. One is,
What have we left out something that you really wanted to tell us about? Is there anything else that I should have asked you but didn't?
You've been pretty effective about it. One thing I can tell you is it's a great life, and if I had to do it over again, I'd do the same. Take up chemistry, and because I still think any opportunities today, I think that just as great as they were when I came out of school. Just that you have to be maybe a little bit smarter and at least be aware of what's going on and what is needed and what's going on.
Yeah.
That's the important thing, you know, what people need. I mean, if they're going into the chemical industry, now are we going to have plastic automobiles and so on? Yes, I think to some extent we will. I think we need it because I think it would be less expensive if we can get these polymers to have the high strength and endurance that they should have, and many of them have not. And so I think the opportunity for the youngster who wants to go into chemistry is still great, my opinion.
Well, that's
everything hadn't been done.
Well, those words may be as inspirational for some youngster who reads this as the discussions you had with your professor were.
One thing I know is that it follows out my life, you know, even into a happy life. I mean, as I was trying to describe, it's full of discovery. There's just nothing like it. And I've been through that many times. Seeing something, feeling something, tasting something, smelling something that no one has ever seen or heard of before.
Yeah. Which, of all the things you were talking with us about today, which do you think is the one discovery that really thrilled you the most? Or is it too good?
Well, the alkaline was one of them. Some of the detergents and the agricultural chemicals, although I had nothing to do with that. I mean, I was instrumental in Monsanto getting into it. But Howard Mason and the research group at the Organic Division did it, but I used to follow it rather closely. And so that you get more food, more growth per acre, more feed per animal. And I mean, it takes less feed per animal in order to produce a pound of meat. That sort of thing. I think that's where the movement is going to be, continue to be, and that's even biotechnology is becoming so important. And maybe we can raise plants that in themselves will be resistant to to bugs, pesticides. I mean, to the animal world. And that's through biotechnological methods.
Well, it is an exciting prospect. Well, that may be a good note on which to close. And I'd just like to thank you for taking the time to.
I'm happy to do it. I enjoyed the visit very much.
We've enjoyed learning more about your career.
I hope I didn't bore you.
No, far from it. It was very, very interesting and illuminating. I'd just like to thank you again.
Well, happy to do it.